Welcome to Through the Word, leading you on a journey through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. Today, Bill Welsh guides us through the New Testament book of Acts. Now to Pastor Bill.
Hi, this is Pastor Bill, and welcome back to our study in the book of Acts. I got to tell you, Acts chapter 17 is one of my favorite chapters. So exciting. And let me start, though, with a question. How much rejection can one person take? We've been following the Apostle Paul and his ministry partners, Silas and Timothy and others, as they have moved now from Asia Minor into Europe, Macedonia. And everywhere they go on this 2.5-year journey, there seems to be the same pattern. You could call it the three R's: revival, riot, and rejection. Acts 16 ends with the civic leaders of Philippi begging Paul and his friends to leave town after an earthquake rocked the region. So here they are, moving on in Macedonia, still north of Greece, looking for people who are hungry to hear the gospel. Verses 1 to 9 finds the team quickly moving through a couple of towns before they settle down for a few weeks in Thessalonica. There was a synagogue there, so Paul stepped in and went to work, using the Jewish scriptures, what we call the Old Testament, to show them that the Messiah had to both suffer and rise from the dead, and identifying that Messiah as Jesus Christ from Nazareth. Verse 4 tells us that some Jews responded, as well as a great multitude of Greeks and a few of the leading women of the city. That's the revival part. The riot comes next. Some of the Jewish community quickly became jealous of the success of Paul's ministry and stirred up an angry mob to hunt them down. But when they couldn't find Paul and his friends, well, they picked on some of the new believers, a man named Jason and a circle of friends who were gathered at his house. You'll love the accusation this crazed mob leveled against Paul and his fellow missionaries. When they dragged Jason and his buddies before the city rulers, here's what they said. It says they cried out that these who have turned the world upside down have come here too. I love that. Upside down. We've turned the world upside down. But I guess when you've been seeing the world upside down for so long, right side up seems like upside down. What amazes me here is that there was a viable circle of new believers in this city after only 3 to 4 weeks. I mean, that is a quick work. And the next step in the journey, verses 10 to 15, it takes Paul and company to Berea, maybe 20 miles west of Thessalonica. And the same pattern of revival and riot and rejection happens all over again. And it's actually the same crowd. They had followed Paul from Thessalonica to Berea to start the trouble there. This has to remind Paul of his earlier days when he was the hound dog chasing Christians and trying to stop this move of God. But look at verse 11. Luke tells us that the Jews in Berea were more noble than those in Thessalonica because they received the word with eagerness and examined the scriptures to see if what Paul was telling them was really biblical. The result was that a large number of Jews, as well as Greek women, came to faith in Jesus Christ before the posse that was pursuing Paul arrived in town. Well, after the uproar in Berea, Paul's friends rush him out of town and take him to the center of all things Greek, Athens. And the rest of the chapter is about Paul's effective work in Athens, a beautiful city, cultured, art everywhere, astounding architecture, high society, higher education, and home to many philosophers. But Athens was a moral and spiritual mess. Sex was sport as well as spiritual. Sexual activity was actually tied into many of the worship practices of that day. Idols, gods, goddesses, and their altars were everywhere. One of the writers of the day, Petronius, had said that it was easier to find a god in Athens than to find a man. And while Paul is waiting for his team to arrive, because he's there all alone at this point, verse 16 tells us, quote, "His spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols," end quote. I think it was more than statues and altars that provoked Paul. I believe what broke his heart was watching the devastating lifestyles of those who adopted the worship practices of this multitude of false deities like Zeus, Apollo, Bacchus, Cybele, Aphrodite, Astarte, just to mention a few of the many gods that were worshipped in that city. Well, as Paul watched this confused city around him, he just couldn't wait for his friends to arrive. So he waded in by himself and began to preach Jesus Christ in a local synagogue as well as in the marketplace, it says, every day with whoever happened to be there. And then one day, some of the local philosophers heard Paul preach, and they invited him to their form of the university, Mars Hill, up on top of one of the mesas above the city. Well, some of them called Paul a babbler. Some said he was preaching strange divinities when he spoke about Jesus rising from the dead. Notice, he had already preached the resurrection of the dead. They called Paul's teaching new doctrine and strange things, and so they asked him to explain what this was all about. So he does. And I think this is one of the most moving and powerful messages in the whole book of Acts. Read it very carefully. But notice, you're not reading a complete message. Because verse 32 tells us that the philosophers and the teachers actually interrupted Paul before he could finish his message. Why? Well, I believe you can tell from their response in verses 32 to 34 that Paul was probably getting to them. Critics of this sermon note that Paul didn't preach the cross. Fair enough. It's not mentioned there. But knowing Paul, can you imagine that the cross was not in his sermon notes, so to speak? Of course it was. Verse 19 tells us that he had been preaching Jesus everywhere, and of course that included the cross as well as the resurrection. If you know Paul, he preached Jesus Christ in his whole message. And look at the result. Some people came to trust Jesus as their Savior. And I'll tell you, if that's failure, may we all fail in that same way. I love how Paul started his message, though, with such a skillful hook, observing how religious the Athenians were with all their gods. And in verse 23, he says this, "I found also an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God." Briefly, that altar had apparently been built to honor a God whom they believed had stopped of a horrible plague years before. So Paul is saying to them, "I want to talk to you about the God you don't know, the God you don't have a name for, the God who stops death in its tracks." But my favorite part of chapter 17 is verses 26 through 28, where Paul says this, "God made all of humanity from one, and he made us so that we would seek him." And then here it is, my favorite part of this message. He says this, "He made mankind that they should seek God in the hope that they might feel their way toward him and find him," end quote. The New King James says it like this, "that they might grope for him and find him." And then Paul says, "Yet he is actually not far from each one of us, for in him we live and move and have our being." That's it. God is not far from any of us. As Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within reach. God is simply calling us to call on him, to simply place our faith in him. So take time and read Paul's message here a couple of times. It's powerful stuff. I believe we're living in a world today that is morphing its way back to a Greco-Roman worldview. We're driven by our passions, looking for loopholes to validate any lifestyle that we desire, screaming for tolerance of every deity and labeled as narrow-minded if we dare to say that Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation. But we have one truth, one Savior to declare. May we be as bold and as skillful as Paul as we share the timeless truth of Jesus Christ in this lost generation. God bless you as you do just that.
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. Start your own journey through the Bible with our web and mobile apps at throughtheword.org. Our apps are free and free to share, so tell your friends and take the journey together. Bill Welsh is the senior pastor of Refuge in Huntington Beach, California. You can find information and links for all of our teachers on the website. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.